The Exiled Eagles have been in exile, but we are finally back with podcast number 4. Today we've got an interview with ex-Palace manager Alan Smith. We discuss injuries, transfers, recent performances, and a couple of Palace fans taking their first A-League game. Hello, and welcome to the Exiled Eagles podcast, sponsored by Top Corner Recruitment. Like much of the Palace first team, we are finally back in action. I'm Tony King, and I'm joined by Dale Quarty.
Hello.
Rob Seltzer.
Morning.
And Mark Werner.
Hey, hey.
Later on in the pod, we've got an interview with Alan Smith. We chat with some fellow Palace fans at this weekend's A-League game. But first, boys, if we'd done this podcast any other time, it all would have been doom and gloom. But there's a small light at the end of the tunnel. Can you assure me, is everything going to be all right?
European football, mate.
Oh, God. Yeah, we can. Good. We can be optimistic.
Okay, that's good. All right, well, let's have an optimistic pod. So we've got a lot to catch up on. So let's start, basically, with the last sort of 3 or 4 games. So we've had a few narrow defeats to some big clubs. Dale, do you want to talk us through, like, Spurs, United and Chelsea?
Yeah. So the usual thing with being a Palace fan in Australia is the time difference, and watching a game live can hurt. So let's take Spurs. Made the decision to stay up and watch it. And I don't care if we lose to Spurs. I hate having to lose to Spurs in the 88th minute when it's now 10 past 1 in the morning and I had a little bit of optimism we might get a point. Look, played well. A long time ago now, if you think about it, but we played really well considering who we didn't have. Again, props go out to Roy Hodgson. He set the team up beautifully. And I think we've just demonstrated why we are in a false position. If we thought that, then we're going to the United game. That was a 6:45 a.m. kickoff. Brilliant. I'm going to watch Palace. I'm not going to be upset when we lose because it's Man United. I'm going to go to work and it'll be fine. Yeah, that's until we lose in the 93rd bloody minute. So again, you've got to say we set ourselves up really well. I mean, the goals are brilliant. Jeff Schlupp and Patrick Van Aanholt. They took that second goal really well, but you just knew when they scored their first. I think we all knew what was going to happen. We all knew, yep. And it is what it is. It was disappointing. It was heartbreaking, but again, it showed promise, which I think is the most important thing. And then we go on to the Chelsea game, which I decided I'm not staying up for this. I'm not watching it before work. I'm going to watch it Sunday morning on the replay, and at 2-0 down, I was like, oh, God, really? But then the return of our saviour, Mr. Zaha, back in town. Benteke off, interesting. Zaha on. And we've got to say we were the better team for 45 minutes and Chelsea were hanging on. We should have had Sorloth's goal. There's no reason. I can understand why the referee didn't give it. From his angle, it looked like it was a Yarrow kicked someone in the head. I think Cahill in the head. So I can understand it. Disappointing, though, because I think we at least deserved the draw. And that took us on to Huddersfield.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I disappointed. We really could have got 3 points out of those games. Yep. And, like, what a difference that would have been, you know?
That's been the story of our season, hasn't it? It's the games where we could have had a win, could have got a draw. I mean, we look at Man City and Bournemouth are the classic examples of those 4 points we threw away. Yeah. Where would we be now? But it's buts and maybes. You know, had we had Sacco, Dan, Zaha, Kabay, it would have been different. I'm not so sure about United because I think at 2-0 up, we should have held on anyway. So look, I never in my wildest dreams thought we'd have been 2-0 up, even if we had our full strength side out. We live to fight another day.
Yeah, luckily we're still in it. That bloody United game, I'd spent a week in Cambodia for my 40th. Literally spent a week on a desert island just doing nothing but drinking and eating. Landed the night before the United game, woke up and watched it. Had to go in for my first day at work, back at work, in an absolute fury. Everyone's like, what the hell happened to you in Cambodia? I was like, nothing in Cambodia. Bloody Palace.
And this is exactly what people don't get who live in the UK and go to the games on a Friday. I appreciate some people might have a job on a Saturday night or whatever. They don't get it, the stress that we get. The bloody hell, it's 10 past 1 now on a Sunday night, Saturday, Monday morning. I've got to go to work. Or it's It's now 9:05. We've just lost. I'm late for work and I can't even go in and smile because we bloody got beat in the last minute, you know?
I'm in a rage.
Just be 4-0 down at half time so I can go to bed or go to work. I'll be happy with that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's a tough one. Anyway, okay, so that was bad news. Onto the sort of plus points. Huddersfield, much better performance, Mark.
Yeah, it was. And you always, oh, it was a must-win game, obviously, or at least get something out of it, expecting a win. And even though we got nothing out of the three games prior, there was still a lot of positives to take out of those games, which was hard at the time, obviously losing, you know, with a minute odd to go and conceding late goals or not getting paid goals. So I think we kept, that momentum, a bit of team belief, Wilfie back, and, had our way in beautiful conditions up there at Huddersfield. They had Aaron Moy back as well, Huddersfield, so I was hoping he wasn't going to come back fresh from a month off and light us up like he did against Man U. He didn't.
I thought he looked pretty good, though.
Oh, yeah, he wasn't a shag on a rock, but, he wasn't. He didn't carve us up or wasn't, you know, like he was in the Man U game or pull out any worldies or anything like that. So I was happy to, get the three, mate, back in amongst it. So, nice. Happy days.
Exactly. Does put a positive spin on everything.
Yeah.
And so, Rob, talking about positive spin, are we still going to be positive after the Liverpool game?
Well, the only good thing really is it kicks off 10:30, so we can go to bed at a reasonable hour. Yeah. I'd say after the three close ones and how we performed against United, Spurs and Chelsea with basically CPFC Sydney playing, it was close but no cigar, but then shows the boys come back, we get those 3 points. Liverpool is 100% a free swing now, I would say.
So yeah, I agree.
We don't obviously we want to win it, but if we don't, we've shown that we can play your Brightons, your Bournemouths, your Southamptons, your Stokes, all the ones we've got left, and beat them. Like we didn't just beat Huddersfield, we thrashed Huddersfield 2-0, I would say. They looked awful. We made them look awful. And we had three or four more gears we could have gone through if they'd scored from a free kick or a corner or whatever. It looked like if we went up two or three gears, we'd score four or five. We just didn't need to. Thank God that, because there was the snow and all that, but you know,
yeah. Wilf never really got out of second gear, did he?
Exactly. No, he didn't.
Yeah, he could have kicked on.
Luka and Jimmy Mack controlled everything in that middle. That Vaseka was class. That Tompkins and Sacco were only troubled when Sacco wanted to trouble us himself.
I could hear in my mind Dale screaming at the TV when Sacco was passing it around the box.
Yeah. You just see it now. It's like, I told you, boy. Obviously, Liverpool have got probably the form player in arguably Europe at the moment, so it'd be tough to keep him quiet, and their front four or five are frighteningly good. But back at the back, they're ropey, so if we just hit them on the counter-attack, and if Wilf plays, if Loftus-Cheek plays, you know, Townsend, I've got my reservations on, but if he just runs around a bit, and Benteke plays like he did against Huddersfield, this goal is there for us as well. So yeah. I wouldn't write it off completely.
Well, fingers crossed. And you mentioned there when you're talking about Huddersfield, the performances of some of the players. Obviously, the one on everyone's lips is Wan-Bissaka, Dale.
Look, so I'll just a quick backstory on Wan-Bissaka. Back in November, I think it was, I started a FIFA Ultimate Team. And I did it with all Spanish players. And I had this one random Palace player in there, Wan-Bissaka. And I was like, don't know who you are, but I'm going to keep you just because you're Palace. And he was right wing back, right back, average. I think he's 55. And I was like, do you know what? Just sit there. I'll never sell you. I'll never do anything with you. Just sit there. Lo and behold, three games ago, this kid turns up playing in the first team. And I have to say, just unbelievable. They say the youngsters have no...
Are you taking credit for Wan-Bissaka here?
Yes, yes, myself and FIFA.
It certainly sounds like a rating of 55. Anyone that's got a rating of 55 in our youth team, we might as well promote them right now.
But this is the thing, because when everyone said, who is he? That's the only reason I knew who he was, because I had this kid on FIFA Ultimate Team. So, yeah, I've got to say, he came in against Spurs, and everyone probably thought, looked good, a little bit raw, some great tackles, rangy, just had no fear. Like, he seemed to be a good little player. And then he played against United, and I was like, whoa, hold on a second, he actually could be something. And he stepped forward to the Huddersfield game, and I think there's no question of a doubt, if he got man of the match in his first game because he was a youngster, and if he got it in the second game because it was like, you know, oh, you know, it's nice because he's done it again. This game was the Huddersfield game. He truly deserved it. He was phenomenal. He didn't miss. I mean, there's some weird thing club posted on Facebook. He had five. He went in for five tackles. He made all five. He went on two runs forward and he completed the crosses both times. He made X number of interceptions. But what I loved is when he decided to take a free. I don't need the gloves. Took the gloves off. Chucked them on the side.
Yeah, that's good.
He meant business.
And also, it's very good that's coming as a right back, because if you said at the start of the season, you know, we need to spend £20 million on a right back, and then we got Fosu Mensah in on loan and we put him in there, we don't need to, as I said on, has been said everywhere, we don't need to do that now, because I'd say he's the incumbent for a while unless he, you know, gets sold or gets injured. My thing on Bissaka quickly is, if it was the other way around and we'd loaned Bissaka from United and had Fosu Mensah in our youth team or in our under-23s, would we just put Bissaka in? Because if you watch him play, I'd say he's as good as, if not better than, Fosu Mensah, but we've been playing Fosu Mensah because he's on loan for Man United.
Yeah, I agree. He seems stronger than Fosu Mensah, you know, stronger in a tackle.
But what we don't know is, because Wan-Bissaka is how old, 19?
20.
He's 20, all right? So he's got no first-team experience anywhere until four games ago or whatever. And so we don't know how he's developed. He was a right winger, so he wasn't even a right back. So it's probably been more about him learning the position, and now we've always looked at him and gone, do you know what? You're ready now. My hand's being forced a little bit, but you're ready. Let's see what you got. So I see where you're coming from, Rob. I reckon it's probably a case of timing. And let's not forget that Fosu Mensah is Dutch, and who brought him in?
Oh yeah. Oh, there's obviously that. There's obviously that as well. But it was my skeptical mind saying that, like, you know, he's a youth product, but we've brought in someone from Man United. Therefore, that Man United player is obviously better. Therefore, he has to play. Whereas, if it'd been the other way around and we'd brought in the young English guy, would he be playing and Fosu Mensah would be on the bench?
And I know you have your reservations about Townsend, Rob, but I think he's really sort of helped out Wan-Bissaka, because he worked hard, Townsend, and he's always sort of covering back when Saka's out of position. So I think it's been like quite important to how Saka's been playing.
Oh, certainly, I'll 100% give you that. He's worked his nuts off, for sure. I'll never take that away from him.
Yeah, and another great player during that Huddersfield game was... I think my player of the season, actually, Tompkins. What do you reckon, Mark? Been good, hasn't he?
Jimmy T, he's great. He's everyone's favourite, I think. His work rate's been fantastic and, you know, just runs all day. I was well impressed and happy for him blocking the Giroud goal in the Chelsea game. How he got to that, I don't know. It was so good to have Giroud denied all day after that worldie put in against us, which was a goal of the season or something last season.
They
got that funny name in Europe or whatever it is. So
Puskás Award.
So yeah, he's been great, mate, and staying fit and you know, marshalling the boys at the back there and doing the business. So I think he'll go pretty close to player of the season. Come stumps, and another good outing for him, so very happy.
So wrap up part one there, and we're back to go through what exactly happened in the January transfer window and what we're going to do in the summer. So join us for part two. Welcome back to part two of Exiled Eagles, sponsored by Top Corner Recruitment. Yes, so last time we recorded, I think, was just about end of December before the transfer window. So we haven't had a chance to discuss what exactly happened in the transfer window. So, Mark, what's your overall sort of feelings about what happened in January?
Mixed feelings for what happened in January. There was the usual ongoing talk through it all. Every morning you sort of got up and had a look at your phone and it was, you know, this person's linked to Palace, that person's linked to Palace, none of which ended up really going through. We ended up with Rakip and Sirlot. Sirlot obviously having a bit of a run for us, the Norwegian who I think will come good. Obviously not played Premier League, but I like he looks good on the ball. He doesn't look as good in the air as what I thought he might. But I reckon he'll come good for the remainder of the season if he stays fit. He's picked up a niggle at the moment and didn't play for Norway in the friendlies. The other two, who knows? I don't know why we have them. I joked on our WhatsApp group saying that I think Palace are the only Premier League club that uses January transfer window to bolster our under-23 squad. Because, they're just getting a run in there and we've not seen them. Which,
very odd.
You know, the whole idea of the January transfer window is, you know, A, getting players that are in fit, and pretty much ready to go, maybe a week or two to get up to speed with how what the manager wants from them and get them out there. And apart from Sirlot, the other two don't even look like coming out.
Yeah, so Rob, can you shine any light on it? What's going on with Rakip in particular?
I'd love to be able to, mate. Love to be able to. It's it's arguably the most pointless signing in football since we signed Aruna Dindan, I'd say. He's on loan, so if you've got a guy on loan with the option to buy, surely you want to see him play. That's my view. And, okay, I get it, he's been on a winter break, but as a Sirlot, Sirlot was thrown in because needs must. Okay, we've got a couple of other central midfielders. When those central midfielders are being run into the ground week in, week out, and you can see they're physically knackered, sure, this boy's got 15 minutes. You know, he's got 15 minutes to come in and run around. I don't know if he's a Swedish international. He's an under-21 international, I think. Been picked up by Benfica, so he's got to have something about him. I'm not saying start him in the Premier League, but what I am saying is give him a run. You know,
Make a substitution, get him on.
You know, if Jimmy Max absolutely shot to bits, which of course he is, he's just played in the midfield two against three of the best teams in the league. Get him off. You know. Give the guy just a run around and a bit of energy and, you know, see what we can do. Because there's absolutely no point in being in that squad. Of us having him. There's none. There's no point us paying his wages. You know, the under-23s might win the league with him. As Mark rightly said, well done. Like, Yak's a bit different. He's a permanent signing, 3 million. And in this day and age, I'm assuming he's not on a massive wage either. He's a punt. He either turns good in 12 months and we've made a 3 million bargain, or we sell him on to someone in Europe probably for 5 million. And that's pretty much it. So I'm not too bothered about that. And sort of, you know, there's you know, things there. That there's signs there. But Rakip, arguably the most pointless signing in world football since Aruna Dindan joined Palace and was too unfit to play and then left.
yeah, it's up there. Very bizarre. Dale, you got any thoughts on the whole thing?
Look, I've had it on some relatively good information that the club, the scouts, advised against signing Yak. Yaroslav Yak. They thought he wasn't going to be up to speed quick enough. They didn't think he was going to be ultimately good enough for the Premier League. Someone at the club, don't know who, decided to get him. And I think now we're seeing that he's not good enough. As it stands, he's not good enough. If we go down, he may well prove to be one of the best centre-halves in the Championship. Because the reality is, Sakho won't be there, Delaney won't be there. You know, so I wonder, do we buy him with a view to the what-if scenario?
Yeah, I agree with all of that. Yeah. So that was sort of what happened in January. Going on to sort of future transfers and the next transfer window, we've actually got a question from Paul Lynch, who says, no one is a one-man team, but do you think we'll hold on to Zaha? And if we don't, who should we go for? Do you think we're planning for this eventuality? Anyone got any thoughts on that?
I'm going to stop because everyone says I hate Zaha. So let me get this out of the way now. I actually think, I actually genuinely believe we're going to keep him. I actually think we are. I just don't see where in the top six clubs he goes to where he can play the way he is and gets away with it. So at Palace, he is the main man. He can do a trick and a flick and lose the ball, and it's okay. He might not want to chase back. It's okay because it's Wilf Zaha. He goes to a Tottenham, a Chelsea, an Arsenal, a United. That's not okay. Arsenal fans are angry because Mesut Ozil doesn't track back. The guy's got 51 assists in the Premier League in next to no time, but they're angry because he doesn't track back. So I don't see Wilf being able to go somewhere where he can get almost a free ride he gets at Palace, which is not a detriment to us, not a detriment to him. Big fish, small pond, he should stay. If he goes, I would love to see us, and we stay up, so that's the caveat, and if we stay up, or when we stay up, Ryan Sessegnon from Fulham. I mean, that kid just looks different gear. If there was some way we could pinch him from underneath the nose of Spurs, I'd take it, if we could. If not, you're looking around the teams at the bottom half of the table. You're looking at your Shaqiris. You're going to see what Stoker got. Maybe it's something like a Shaqiri. We know he's obviously up for the fight. He's played. Shaqiri is Stoke's Zaha. Yeah, he does for them. He does for us. You have a look around at maybe what Huddersfield have got. So whether you go like for like, or you bring in like an Aaron Moy, if you can steal him, and you jig around what you do in the midfield. Do we go and look to see what Chelsea have got on loan, like a Loftus-Cheek? That, for me, those are the options. It's not so much I don't think it's going to be able to say a big name. It's going to be tough. You can't replace him. You cannot replace Wilfred Zaha. But I don't think we're going to have to. I think he's going to stay.
Cool. Rob, do you think he'll stay? Who else do we need to buy?
In a word, yeah, I think he'll stay. At least for the next season, to see how it goes. He's on a big, big wicket with us. And as Dal said, he's guaranteed to play. He can do what he wants at Palace. At the end of the day, he can do what he wants. He can play how he wants to play. He can do what he wants, how he feels. And he can't do that in the top six sides. Top six sides rotate their team weekly. So for him to leave, someone's going to have to fork out at least 50, I'd say at least 50 mil, and then pay him six figures on top of that. We know, yeah. Spurs won't do it because Spurs have, like, Harry Kane's on 80 grand a week. So if they pay Wilf over 100, Harry Kane immediately jumps up to 200 grand a week. City don't need him. Chelsea won't want him. United, been there, done that. Liverpool, they don't need him. That's where they're really strong. And then Arsenal.
Before they signed Mkhitaryan, I'd have said they were going for Wilf. But now they've got Mkhitaryan, yeah. I don't think they need him. Just quickly, there's a guy in the Championship at the moment who's scoring goals for fun up at Middlesbrough. Guy by the name of...
Is his name P. Banford?
P. Banford, yeah. He's scoring a few goals. We reckon to him, he runs the channels.
He sounds promising. Should get him in.
Well, we should look at him. We should look at him and then quickly look away.
One thing I will say is that I've mentioned this name in various groups of various people. There's one player out there who I would look at without a shadow of a doubt, and his name's Mason Mount. He's 19 years old. He's played England representatives, age groups. He's been the captain. He's on loan from Chelsea.
In your FIFA team?
No. He's on loan. He's currently on loan from Chelsea to Vitesse Arnhem. He's a central midfielder. He's started, I think, 16 games. He's got 7 goals, 4 assists. He looks the biz. He looks like he can play football. And I have no doubt, like, if he wasn't at Chelsea or in the top six, he'd be playing Premiership football. He looks ready. And I would love to see us go for a punt with somebody like that. I really would.
Right, okay, you heard it here first. Yeah. Let's see what happens.
Hot off the press.
Okay, so another question we got was from James Simmons. He wants to know, is there something wrong with the training or medical staff for us to suffer so many injuries? And should our fitness levels be higher to stop us losing at the end? And do we warm up correctly? Mark, you got any thoughts on this? Because I've been wondering this as well, to be honest.
Yeah, it's something certainly begs the question. If we are doing that, because the injuries we've had this season is monumental, you know, any team would have struggled to get through with the amount of guys we've had out, and a lot of key players as well, you know, not so much fringe players out, our Wilfs, Kabais, you know, Dans, these guys. And for running games out, I mean, since, you know, I'm a supporter of Powell since 04, but man, the amount of games we lose or are winning and then draw in the last 5 to 10 minutes or an injury time is just, heartbreaking, you know. And at first I thought, oh, well, this is just football and this is kind of what happens and whatnot.
Is it just us, though?
Oh, my goodness.
Do other teams lose this, like, so heartbreakingly so often, or just seems like every game has got something about it?
I don't know. I mean, I don't watch any other teams in remotely the amount that I watch Palace, but it just, I would have to say no. Without research, I have to say no, because, man, it happens so much. And, you know, even the Man U game, we were just out on our feet in that last 10. And you know, even when they scored the first one, you thought, yeah, here we go. We'll blow this. And then and they did. They just ran over the top of us. So, you know, is that fitness? Do we need to do, you know, a lot of other teams went and did some warm weather training in the break, whether that would have been beneficial, some high altitude stuff. I don't know, but it seems, that we do tend to get rolled over a bit towards the end there. And injury-wise, I mean, is it, depending on the type of training that they're doing, you know, there's not one sort of injury that's reoccurring. You go, we'll stop doing that, but you'd have to review it, mate, and have a bit of a look at it.
Yesterday I went to up to the Central Coast to watch Sydney FC take on Central Coast Mariners. I have a bit of an away day. I took a couple of Palace fans with me who don't usually go to the A League, and I got their thoughts at half time about what it's like watching the A League when you're used to watching Palace. And spoiler alert, they didn't like it very much. So let's hear what they have to say. Okay, so it's Tony here from Exiled Eagles. We've watched a very, very average 1-0 half-time Sydney FC versus Central Coast Mariners. I'm here with Crystal Palace fan, CPFC Sydney, Kevin Winston. So, Kevin, tell me about your going to the game experiences compared to going to Palace.
Well, you know, it's been an interesting day when the most exciting thing that's happened involves tomato ketchup. We've now got an inflatable blimp that is shaped like a tomato ketchup bottle flying over the pitch here. You don't tend to get that at Selhurst Park.
Okay. Let's not consider the half-time entertainment. Talk to me about the game. We've had 45 minutes, we've had one goal. Talk to me about it.
Yeah, no, do you know what? The football was pretty poor. Part of me thought about the pitch being better used for, like, agricultural purposes. But that being said, you know, look, Sydney have taken a goal. They'll probably get another one. It's good to see them get a win, I hope. And, yeah, I mean, it's more than Palace can do these days, so it's pretty exciting.
Very good point, very good point. OK, so we've come away from Sydney to the Central Coast. How's your away day experience been?
Very different. We got the train up. Public transport in Australia is pretty poor, so that's one thing. But yeah, you know, look, it's like leaving a city and going to, like, a really backward village, but that's okay as well. You know, makes you appreciate where you live a bit more. So
exactly, it's like Palace before the Premier League. You ended up in some weird places, and we've ended up in a weird place.
Yeah. Do you know what? It's actually quite nice as well, though, because it's nearby. Like, it's less than 2 hours. There's not many places that you can go to outside of Sydney that are that quick to get to. I mean, it's not somewhere I choose to live, but it's actually a great place to see a football game.
Kevin, for you, that was like a really legitimate answer, so thank you. So I'm also here with Dave Kendall, a fellow CPFC Sydney member. How's your away day experience been?
It's been a pretty good day. We've had plenty to drink already, and we're still going strong. The game hasn't been that exciting, really. Not too many chances both ways, but...
The game has been dreadful, but... Okay, so you take your average two-hour away day for Palace. How does this compare?
Well, you don't get Virgin trains over here. I mean, you just get the Sydney trains, a bit cramped. Not allowed to drink, which is a bit of a shame. Well, legally anyway, as the bartender told us on the way. The stadium's half empty. We've just been watching a flying tomato sauce bottle. As ridiculous as that sounds, we might have to give video evidence so everybody can actually know what we're talking about there. That's the cheers of the flying tomato sauce bowl flying.
On your shed, Sam, has got a lot to live up to. We literally are cheering a flying tomato sauce bowl.
I've never seen anything so stupid at a football ground. And I've seen some stupid shit.
And, I mean, I don't want to talk about the quality of football, but, I mean, where do you rate it?
Maybe championship level.
Yeah, maximum. Yeah, it's been poor. Okay, yeah, so thanks, Kevin Day, for that. In our next part, we've got part one of our interview with ex-Palace manager Alan Smith. We recorded this back in January when he was over here for the Ashes. Back then, we were in the heady heights of 12th and hadn't had the abomination of a transfer window, so it was all quite positive. But despite being a few months old, Alan had some like really interesting things to say. So have a listen to that in the next part. And then the second part of that interview will be in our next pod. So yeah, coming up, interview with Alan Smith. Hello and welcome back to Exiled Eagles. Dale and I are very lucky to be sat here with two-time Palace manager, Alan Smith. Alan, how you doing?
Yeah, lovely to meet you again.
Yeah, yeah, you too, mate. Thanks for joining us. Much appreciated.
Pleasure.
You having a good time in Australia?
No, I loved it, except for the cricket. I mean, it's been a little bit hard to follow, but yeah. I've done Adelaide and Brisbane and Sydney, so I've got a good idea of... how we did. It was disappointing, but not everything else in Australia makes up for it.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yes,
me and Dale went to Perth and we had a very good time there despite the cricket.
Yeah, despite
we?
The cricket, yeah.
Yeah. So that's right, your son lives over here, is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he's been over for about 5 years now. He's managing director at Merlin. Loves it here, but I'm quite fortunate he can get back twice a year to England, which is good. He's a mad Fulham fan as well, so he tries to get his visits, hoping that Fulham are going to be in the playoffs.
How have you found like keeping on top of what's going on in the football world whilst you're over here? Sort of, how do you go about that? Do you watch the games or just read the papers?
No, I do a bit of everything. I watch the games. I mean, there's not difficult getting television out here to watch games. Most days I buy the newspapers going on the internet. So there wouldn't be many games, you know, and I follow Palace obviously closely. You know, I'm delighted Roy Hodgson's done so well. So it's not difficult, you know, we're living in a small world really to keep track with everything.
Yeah. Totally.
Do you get a chance to get, or have you been to any of the A-League games at all? Or?
No, I haven't. I've got a friend who runs Melbourne, but, if anything, I try and concentrate on the English games, watch those. I haven't really.
Okay, and what are your thoughts on the current Palace team at the moment and the sort of situation they found themselves in and where they are now?
I thought at the start of the season they actually had quite a good team and they got a decent squad together. I thought the first appointment was strange. I didn't really fit in the DNA with Palace. You know, Palace have always been a hard tackling, get the ball up there with pace. You know, to try and slow the game down as we were early on just seemed not what we've ever been known for. But I think the chairman was brave. He made an appointment, wanted a change, but I think he was brave enough to see it wasn't working.
Yeah.
And to get Roy Hodgson in, I think possibly there were some raised eyebrows, but I know him quite well. I've worked with him. He's a super bloke, and I think he was just right for us at the time.
Yeah.
Also got to add Ray Lewington in there. I think he's been a real good, you know, he was with me at Palace when we won promotion. He was my number three. David Kemp was the number two. But he's a real good man, Ray, and I think him and Roy complement each other. And I think that's been great for Palace as well.
Yeah,
and does this sort of surprise you how well Roy's done? Did you think it was a decent appointment at the time?
I think he's done better than I thought, because we're now, as I think we're sitting here, he's the 12th. They're on an unbeaten run. And I thought he's bought the best out of the players that he's got as well. You know, he's not confrontational, Roy. He tends to encourage. He's very strict on the way he wants to play. He doesn't change his training tactics too much. So I think he's done better than I thought. But when I actually look at the squad, I do think, you know, 12th, yeah, I can understand why they would well be there.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. So you were obviously manager at Palace twice. Different experiences, I suppose, both times. I've got to say, like, my favourite season, I think, as a Palace supporter, was the promotion season where you were in charge and you made Gareth Southgate captain that year, if that's right. Has it surprised you sort of how his career's gone?
No, it hasn't really. He was a very diligent, very decent guy, very studious. He never ever got anything given to him, Gareth. Worked very hard as an apprentice. It was a tough upbringing at Palace at that time. You know, we had some big players and strong players. So it doesn't really surprise me. And also, people sometimes forget he played 55 times for England. You know, he's so polite and comes across so well. But, you know, his actual playing record is... And when he, if you look at all three clubs he played for, Aston Villa, Middlesbrough and Palace, he managed all... Sorry, he captained all teams. You know, you don't do that just by fluke.
Yeah.
So it just goes to show he did have those leadership qualities. But, you know, I'm very proud of him and for him. And his humility and the way he goes about things is just fabulous.
And did you see him going on to be an England manager back then?
Or? I wouldn't go as far as to say I saw him as an England manager, but I always saw him as a leading player. I worked for him at Middlesbrough as director of football for a bit, and I could see... He had all the ingredients, but he was only about 34 then, and he got that job too early. So, but I saw the good work he did with the England under-21s, and he's a hard worker, Gareth. He puts in a big shift. So I'm not surprised. Whether I'd have seen him as an England manager or probably not so sure.
Right, right. Are you still in touch with him?
Oh, yeah, weekly. You know, I spoke to him yesterday. There's always little things, you know, we can talk about. Or I listen to a problem that he might have that he thinks he can discuss with me and just run past me. And not, it might not just be on, you know, what the best team is it. We've got this problem at the moment with coaches and, as we discussed earlier, the Rooney rule now coming in, which I believe is great. It's long overdue in my mind. So those sort of things, you know, we have to look at. And just talking on the Rooney rule, by the way, we didn't discuss it earlier. It's not just coaches, it's fitness, doctors, all the ancillary staff that need to be filled. And I think we need to look at why there haven't been more Asians, blacks, whatever, doing those jobs. I mean, it's quite amazing to me. It's not just coaching, it's the whole thing that go with it. And it's one of the things that Gareth and I were discussing yesterday.
Cool. We're currently, it's what, middle of January now over here, so January transfer window is in full swing. So how important do you find a January transfer window? I'm sort of asking you that because I remember we got Paul Stewart in on loan and he really changed our season.
Yeah, definitely.
What did you do? You have a big part in that? Did you want to get him in?
Oh, no, definitely. I did want to get him in, but he was on big wages in those days. I mean, he was earning, I mean, just so that we know, he was earning about £8,000 a week. He'd been at Liverpool, whereas probably the average player at Palace at that time would have been on 4 or 5. So it was quite an enormous jump. But I think the big playoff, the problem a little bit with the playoffs... not with the players, with getting players in. You don't want to lose players either, you know, and Palace now have got some quite exciting players. And the big thing is we don't want to be losing Zaha to Liverpool or anybody else. I've seen that happen before at Palace. Whenever we've had a really good team, you know, and if you go back to my time with Ian Wright or we go back to even the Venables Allens, we've always sold our best players at the wrong time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I prefer we weren't a selling club. And I think we're actually big enough with the crowd base we have not to keep selling our players.
I'll ask you one on transfers. What's your take on like the loan system? So obviously we're benefiting right now with Timothy Fossey-Mensah and Ruben Loftus-Cheek.
but they're coming from pretty big clubs, United and Chelsea. Ruben Loftus-Cheek probably won't get a game back there, and neither will Tim Fosu-Mensah. So we're developing them for them, or they're going to redevelop and go elsewhere. What benefit are we, do we get out of it?
Well, in the short term, we possibly get a better player than the one we've got. But it is short term. I mean, I'm not mad on the loan system because I still want people to play for our club, to wear the badge and all those things that go with running a football club. And I just don't quite like the thought that we're playing people that are, you know, actually are at another club and are owned by them. You know, I still believe that, you know, I know it's an old-fashioned view that if you play for Palace, you play for Palace, they pay your wages. So I would rather veer against it. And Palace have always had a really good youth setup, and I'd like us to get back to that a little bit more of developing our own and bringing them through.
Yeah, that's what I think every fan wants, isn't it?
Well, I think when we were talking before we were, you know, gone online, you know, I joined Palace in 84, but I'd already followed the Venables and Alisson era when they were bringing Vince Hilaire through, Billy Gilbert. We had some really exciting Swindlehurst. I mean, I could go on and on about that group of players before I joined. So I sort of knew what the role model was when I went there in 1984. And probably between 84 and 88, 89, my main job was just to try and produce players for the first team, which I loved doing. I mean, there was no pressure in the job. And it really was just about football coaching.
What were some of the names that you...
Well, Sulaco and Shaw were obviously the probably my first two getting them through. Then, of course, we had Dean Gordon, Gareth, Simon Osborne. You know, there's probably so many I've left off there of that list. It sort of rolled off the tongue.
Great players,
I've got to say, they were really nice guys, you know. I'm still in communication with them. I mean, you and I follow each other on Twitter, but Simon Osborne and Dean Gordon are all on Twitter, and I hear from them with Bob White, who was one of the guys who used to help me get the players in. So it was a really great time.
Yeah, I bet. Also, Alan Pardew, you were saying you worked with for him. From you know,
we signed Alan from Yeovil. I don't think Steve actually knew who he was. I mean, we bought him for £4,000, and he came through. And another good signing for us we had lots of good signings, but that goes without saying. I mean, Jeff Thomas and coming and John
Pemberton.
Sorry, from Johnny, kill me if
he, a couple of John. I hope not.
Kill me for that. Both coming from Crewe were good, and of course Chris Coleman eventually coming from Swansea didn't really make a big impact with us. But that Championship year that you referred to, he was really outstanding. Yeah. And also the year we were in the Premiership and the two Cup Finals. You know, great in the change room, great with the lads, and you know, again, good that he's been on to manage Wales.
Yeah.
Yeah. Over him, as well, say, I went and saw where he crashed his car when he had that accident, and I'll never forget saying to my dad, I can't believe how he got out of that alive. And from then on, me and my dad used to look at him in a different way, thinking this guy, to come back from what he'd obviously happened to him was brilliant, yeah. And that's unfortunately looks like a bit of a theme for us with Pat, but again, what those guys go through, and it's not just all glitz and glamour, is it?
So. No, I think he must have come quite close, I would imagine, to be a Palace manager. Sometimes the timing's never been quite right,
no,
and we've got rid
of
somebody.
Yeah.
But, you know, I still think one day he may.
Yeah. I think if we hadn't been in the Premier League, if we'd been in the Championship, he'd be Palace manager by now.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Okay, so that was part one of our interview with Alan Smith. And part two will be in the next pod. He's got some interesting things to say about working under Simon Jordan. So look forward to that. Okay, we'll wrap up here. I just want to give a quick shout out to Seagulls Down Under. They've raised $7,000 for the John Moriarty Football Foundation through Renfrew games we play with them. So that's great stuff. So well done, you guys. So we've got Liverpool coming up. And then the big games against Bournemouth and Brighton. Hopefully, we get some points against them. You feeling positive about that, guys?
Yeah, I'm strangely optimistic that we'll pick something up against Liverpool. Everyone's given us no hope. They reckon Salah's going to score 350,000 goals.
I think that.
but you know, I just think they're shaking the back. So get a point there. Everyone's feeling good. Roll into Bournemouth, 8-0 win there, and a 15-0 win against Brighton. There you go.
Easy. And Mark, you got anything planned? Because the Liverpool game's obviously Easter Saturday. It's a nice 10:30 kickoff here in Sydney. Is it? What time's it up in Brisbane?
Mate, like you, in the last 24 hours, I have a big day coming up for Liverpool. 9:30 of an evening here, nice. And we've got Brisbane Roar played their last home game of the season at 4:30 that afternoon. I'm gonna start at about 2:30 and roll through the Raw game, playing the Mariners actually, who you played yesterday. Right. Hopefully get a win. We're battling our way into the top six. We might be there by this afternoon, and then on to Liverpool, which will be great. Hopefully I remember it. best tape it. And
yeah, you'll be seeing 100 Mo Salahs.
Yeah, I will be. Get the ball away from him. But I'm hoping that with the Champions League coming up 3 or 4 days afterwards, that they might give him a rest, which would be nice. Bloody lovely. And not a lot expected of us. They're our bunny team there for a little bit, but that seems to have subsided a little. And get a few boys back out in the paddock and might nick a point, or dare I say it, three, and then absolutely batter Brighton, which would be good.
Yeah, it would be nice.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, cool. And if anyone is listening in Sydney, we've got the CPFC Sydney Easter drinks, which will coincide with that Liverpool game. So we will be at the Palace Hotel on George Street from about 9 o'clock. So come and join us there. And should be a good do. All right, guys, thanks very much for joining me. And let's chat again in a few weeks.
Cheers, guys.
Sounds good. Pleasure.
Okay, and thanks for listening.